Salt Lake City updates the fee and scheduling process for athletic fields. San Pete County sheriffs captured the elusive mountain man. And an explosion at a Tooele County titanium plant injures two. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Brian Grimmett. Community sports teams will have to reserve Salt Lake City playing fields by the hour this spring rather than in week-long blocks like they did in the past. Concession stands will also have to pay more to set up shop. Salt Lake City Council voted last night to update the fee structure to accommodate an increased demand for fields. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
Councilwoman Jill Remington Love says the change is not about increasing revenue, but freeing up limited fields for competing groups looking for a place to play.
Under our current policies, you can, at a very low fee, block out all the fields for the week. So we're hoping that by increasing the fee, people will think about what they need and they'll book what they need and not more than what they need.
The new fee system requires teams to pay between $2 and $5 per hour, depending on the organization. Previously, teams reserved fields by the week for a $15 flat fee. Concession stand rental fees will also rise from $100 per season to up to $50 per month. In a four-month season, that means concessions fees will double for some. The council also decided to continue operating under the so-called grandfather clause, which guarantees reservations for long-standing leagues. But Love says only up until 2015, when the city completes construction of its new soccer complex.
We're going to give ourselves a year to work through with the different clubs a fair and equitable way to do it, but for sure, clubs that are based in Salt Lake City with kids who play from Salt Lake City and who have seniority are going to be given some sort of prioritization. But we want to work with all of the clubs, and hopefully they can help us come up with a fair approach.
The new fees will go into effect sometime this season. It's unclear how soon that will be. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
There were some shots fired yesterday as law enforcement officers moved in on Utah's so-called mountain man, Troy Knapp. But in the end, he was captured without anyone being hurt. Knapp is suspected of burglarizing dozens of cabins in the southern and central parts of the state over the past 6 years. San Pete County Sheriff Brian Nielsen says Knapp fired shots at a helicopter but didn't hit it. Salt Lake Tribune reports a deputy sheriff fired his weapon at Knapp when Knapp pointed a rifle at him. He surrendered after he realized he was surrounded. A group looking for shed antlers alerted authorities when they encountered Knapp last Friday, and officers have been tracking him since then.
Two workers caught in an explosion at a titanium factory in Tooele County yesterday were listed in stable condition at the University of Utah Burn Unit. Tooele County spokesperson Wade Matthews says the workers were conducting routine maintenance at the Allegheny Technologies facility in Grantsville when the explosion was reported.
They suffered second-degree burns on their hands and arms, upper torsos and faces. There is a potential for chemical involvement. They use chemicals at that plant. So they were decontaminated as standard operating procedure before they were put into the helicopter.
The workers are two men, ages 38 and 53. They were potentially exposed to tetrachloride 4, magnesium chloride, and chlorine. The Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration is expected to investigate the case. The Utah Department of Transportation has been hit by the largest single theft of copper cable in its history. UDOT's John Gleason says they're surprised nobody noticed the thieves at work right along I-15 in North Salt Lake last week.
They basically stripped out 35,000 feet of copper wiring, you know, that spans about the length of a mile, 11 separate tall light poles.
Gleason says replacing the cables will cost between $50,000 and $60,000, so taxpayers are the biggest victims in these thefts.
We're having to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to combat this problem, repair and replace the copper wiring that's been stolen out of these junction boxes and these lights.
Gleason says crews are starting to use aluminum wire now, which has less value as salvage. He asks for the public's help in catching the thieves by watching for unusual activity along in any roadway and contacting police if they see it. The visitor center at the Kennecott Utah Copper Bingham Canyon mine will not be open to the public this year. Mine officials have detected the slope movement near the visitor center over the winter. Kennecott Copper spokesperson Kyle Bennett says current conditions aren't dangerous, but they don't want to take any risks.
So what we're seeing is fractions of an inch movement on that northeast side of the wall. And so as we see some movement, as we continue to monitor it, we can make better decisions about what we do in that area in the future, whether the visitor center is at that location or whether the visitor center is at another location.
He says a new, more hands-on experience should open to the public in 2014. Since 1992, more than 3 million people have visited the Bingham Canyon Mine. Utah's the friendliest state in the nation for small business. That's according to a study by Thumbtack.com and the Kauffman Foundation. This is the second year they've done the study surveying small businesses. Utah's moved up from number 4 in 2012 to the top spot this year. Thumbtack co-founder Sandra Daniels says Utah sets the standard for creating an environment in which small businesses can grow.
There has been an increase in entrepreneurship. I think the state and some of the cities have made an effort to encourage this sort of thing. And so the overall attitude has just continued to improve. And also, I think just general optimism about the state status right now and its prospects for the future versus a lot of places in the country, there was quite a bit more pessimism about prospects.
The state won a grade of A+ for business-friendly regulation and for ease of starting a new business. The state's lowest grade was a B for the ease of hiring additional employees. The rankings are based on a survey of more than 7,700 small business owners nationwide.
Until now, blacklisting has been a crime in Utah, keeping a list of people intended to prevent them from working. But that law was repealed by the Utah legislature, and Governor Gary Herbert signed the bill yesterday. The sponsor, Republican Senator Daniel Thatcher, says the law was vague and might have allowed companies that ask workers to sign non-compete agreements to be accused of blacklisting. Governor Gary Herbert has approved legislation aimed at curbing adoption fraud. The law requires agencies to implement rules barring employees from misinforming adoptive parents about children they intend to adopt. Lawmakers say it will reduce the growing number of women traveling to Utah to give babies up for adoption without first consulting the birth father. A father won a court case in Utah Supreme Court last year to regain custody of a child who had been adopted without his consent. Governor Gary Herbert has signed legislation pushing back the start date of the state's guest worker program. The legislature approved the guest worker law in 2011, and it had been set to take effect on July 1st of this year. It would permit illegal immigrants who haven't committed other crimes and have steady employment to remain in the state with their immediate families. One of the architects of the guest worker law says the program was set up because there was no federal program, but now it appears Congress may tackle immigration with a comprehensive plan this year. A federal judge in Albuquerque has ruled the Navajo Nation can proceed with its copyright infringement lawsuit against Urban Outfitters, but the judge tossed out a couple of the tribe's legal theories. The tribe wants monetary compensation and an order permanently enjoining Urban Outfitters from using the name Navajo or variations of it.
A family from London goes to Sri Lanka to visit relatives and gets caught in the biggest natural disaster to hit that country that anyone can remember. Betsy Burton has this review of Wave by Sonali Dhirani Yagala.
I didn't stop for my parents, didn't shout out to warn them. I couldn't stop. It will stall us. We must keep going. These quick, urgent sentences wrapped out on page 2 of this extraordinary nonfiction account give the reader an instant, shivering premonition of doom. The date is December 27, 2004. The place, Yala, Sri Lanka. A mother and father, two children, and two grandparents are vacationing together over the holidays. They're a happy family, two academic Londoners who are committed parents, doting Sri Lankan grandparents, two boys, ages 5 and 7, who are bright, active, curious, and then they're gone, engulfed by the now infamous tsunami that killed thousands. Only the mother left, submerged even as the water recedes in an endless tide of grief, grief beyond sanity. There are no easy steps into or out of grief in Wave. Its narrator is quite simply drowning, utterly unmoored in a sea of memory, denial, pain, alcohol, despair. As she wanders the devastated landscape where she grew up, where she lost everything, she begins to wander the devastated terrain of her own mind. Again and again she tries and fails to recapture, recreate all that she'd loved, lingering in the sunlit patches of happiness she remembers, and ironically bathing us in those same brief snatches of joy before we disappear with her back into the shrouded present. I won't say more about her long submersion, except that this harrowing and ultimately redemptive tale, which could have been merely pathetic in the hands of a blunter sensibility, a lesser talent, is in fact a brilliantly etched portrait of a mind overwhelmed by loss. The writing is unnervingly exact, the precision of its details creating shards of pain from the present devastation and simultaneously memory after shimmering memory from slivers of a lost life. The author's interior reality is evoked so skillfully that the reader wanders with her, sees what she sees in memory, as well as feeling at least some of her present pain. I've never read a piece of nonfiction like this. I nearly put it down after the second sentence, realizing where I was about to be taken. But I'm more than just thankful I didn't do so, because Wave has become an indelible piece of my own memory, more so than most novels I've read.
Betsy Burton is the proprietor of the King's English Bookstore in Salt Lake City, and she reviewed Wave by Sonali Dhirani-Yagala.
And that is your KUER News Pod for Wednesday, April 3rd. For the latest news and updates from around the state, check out our new free smartphone app that you can download for your iPhone or Android device. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.